Hi everybody, I'm Julia, and I'm an alcoholic. Let's have a meeting. And welcome to the Monday Night Blue Chip Speakers Meeting on NABA Zoom, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more sobriety tells his or her story. This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual in our own personal stories describes in their own language and their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and a clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our NABA Zoom room tonight and listening later on aabluechipspeakers.org, desperately in need, will hear tonight's speaker. And I believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I'm one of them too. I must have this thing. The person introducing our speaker tonight is Patty.
Hey, guys, I'm Patty. I'm an alcoholic. And gosh, great crowd we got going tonight. Marianne is going to tell her story tonight, our very own Marianne. And I'm really excited. She has about 13 months or 14 months, I think, now. And she has worked this program fearlessly. And she's not afraid to be vulnerable and open and cry and then get back up and do the next right thing. So I'm excited to hear her story. And with that, I give you Marianne. Woohoo!
Okay, is it too late now to back out? I'm so nervous. I love you guys. Patty, thank you. I'm nervous because I know I'm just going to probably cry through the whole thing, so you'll just have to bear with me.
Hi, Marianne.
Hi, Roseanne.
Hi, Marianne.
Hi.
Hi, Marianne.
Oh, hi, Lauren.
It's just us. Don't worry.
Yeah, hi, Marianne. Yeah. It's all of us.
And I'm in my evening loungewear.
Yeah. Oh, man. You guys, every single one of you. And thank you, Julie. And thanks, Tim, really. And thanks to Adam and Jenny and John. God bless you, Adam and John. You guys have done a friggin' such a good job. So proud of you. You just keep doing it. You just keep doing what you're doing. And you just keep coming back. And Jenny, you know how what I think of you. We're the pandemic sisters, so each one of you hold a special place. I seriously, and I know it just sounds like a bunch of stuff, but it's so true. Each one of you, if I had to write something down, I could write something down with each something that each one of you has said that has impacted my sobriety. So anyway, so I'm going to just be a snot-nosed crier, and it doesn't matter because you guys love and trust me. I trust you. You love me, and I trust you, and I love you. So I'm Marianne, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Marianne.
I'm such a grateful alcoholic. And this is what I've done all day. So, thank you, God. I just have to thank my higher power is God, and I have to thank him first and foremost. And then I have to thank, AA. I have to thank Bill W. and Bob. I have to thank them because none of us would be here. And I have to thank, all of you in the rooms of AA, every room I've walked in. Of course, that includes my beautiful sponsor. And then, you know, of course, my family. I have to thank my family. They've been behind me every step of the way. I've been very fortunate. My sobriety date is March 24th, 2020. I walked into the rooms November 19th of 2019. And then I had a relapse in March. And the March 23rd, and I like to say it was a 5-hour relapse because I counted, and then I got right back up, and thank God because of you all, and came back and then made a year, and you know, on March 24th. So I don't even know where my notes are. This is so silly. Okay, so anyway, I am one of 8 kids, and I was born in Barstow, California. And we moved around a lot. My mom and dad, my dad worked for the Santa Fe Railroad, and he started in the yards and then worked up to assistant chief of the mechanical department in Chicago. So every time, you know, we he got promoted, we had to move. So, and then my mom, she's still with us today, thank God, she's 90. There were 6 girls, 2 boys, and all the men are gone, unfortunately. My dad passed in 2003. He was 76. He drank all his life, but I can't say he was an alcoholic. But he did drink all of his life. He died with pneumonia, complications of emphysema. And then my brother, who was 24, 33 years ago, I think in July, it'll be that John took his life, and at age 24, and then Paul, my dear Paul, and he died 3 years ago at age 56 in a nursing home at the neglect of, you know, at the hands of caretakers. Those are 3 very important people in my life that I lost. And but anyway, so the Still Magnolias are left to the 6 girls. This is what my sister loves to say. You know, some of us are close, some of us are not. We're just I want to say the word I want to say because I love that word, but we're just a messed up family. Anyway, so I don't know where I am now. So anyway, we've moved a lot, and I think with each move, it was pretty big for me because even though I was an extrovert, and when I was little, I knew that I was, well, I didn't know I was an introvert, but I loved my little silence and my little solitude. And then as time went on, of course, that part would be filled with fear of abandonment and tremendous fear of abandonment, low self-esteem, you know, sadness, depression, the need to be loved, the need to be liked, the need to always be accepted by somebody. But anyway, so these moves were okay, but then they you know, it was hard because I had to detach. When I said my goodbyes, I was really attached to people, places, and things. And so with each move, it was kind of, you know, it was hard. But I always bounced back and made it through. And I think Clovis, New Mexico, was we lived there 5 years. Those were probably the best years of my life. And but that was when I remember sitting on my dad's lap and having my first taste of beer. I mean, I can remember that as if it was yesterday, and I can remember the bitterness and going like this, but I loved it because it quenched my thirst. I'd been outside running around. The thing that I need to say about Paul real quickly before I forget is Paul was born with brain damage, and he was considered legally blind and legally deaf. And I loved him so much. I was so close to him. And he lived with us the entire time until the end of his life. He finally went into a nursing home for, well, the last actually 15 years of his life. He lived in a nursing home. So, but he was extremely volatile as we grew up. He became very mentally and it, not only physically challenging, but became more mentally challenging for my folks. And we were the subject of a lot of violence and a lot of fits, a lot of police calling to the house to restrain him. So I think I started to develop a little of PTSD, which I didn't know what that was then. So here I go. I've got a little PTSD, little depression, the serotonin deficiency coming, and anxiety. So all of that, and then growing up, I think when I was born, I was just born extremely sensitive and deep, feeling things very deeply. And not knowing really, and kind of like I could see things, that sometimes I knew what was going to happen to somebody. But I didn't know what all, that meant. I just meant that I felt stuff deeply. And then just this past year, so ironic, this with the pandemic, I found out, oh, it's called an empath. That's what I am. I'm an empath. But I really never knew that. So I was kind of pegged very early on as the real sensitive one, the over emotional one, I was a pain in everybody's ass because I was always the mother hen running around and telling everybody what to do in my family. And, I was taking inventory at a very early age, running to my mom and going, guess what? She did this and she did that. So, but my attachment was really to my mom. I had a deep, deep attachment. And the fear of abandonment was set very early on. So anyway, fast forward with all of that. That's kind of who I was, growing up. And so then facing these moves, it was tough. I mean, I think each move got tough. So with each move became more the experiencing of alcohol and cigarette smoking. And so I know when we moved from Clovis to L.A., that was a huge, a shock to the system. I was like, what the hell is this? This is, small town. Everybody knows your name. You go to a place and no one cares if they know your name. And but I settled in and I started to, really love. We moved to Riverside. I really loved the beaches and all that kind of stuff. But I remember then just, what was I? I don't even know how old I was, maybe 13 at the time. And I remember starting to, take bourbon out of my dad's cabinets. And that's when I started to experience with smoking pretty heavily. I would say those good old Territon Camel, non-filter. Oh, my God. And and then when we moved from L.A., just when I was getting, used to that, we moved again to, from LA to, Kansas City, Kansas, another small town. So here we are now. We've gone from a big, a place that I was settled into a small town and the shock of it all, but I got used to it, was there for 2 years, but boy, I tell you, my drinking really picked up there. I was 14, I think at that time. And did a lot of, partying and drinking and throwing up and all that stuff and horrible. And then I was 2 years in Kansas City. And then we moved to Naperville, Illinois. So that was small town, big city again. And it was another traumatic move. And now it's really bad because I'm 16 and, I've been taken out of school, just started my 10th grade sophomore and was yanked out of that. And then, started in Naperville. They were way high above us academically, the whole thing. And so my grades started to slip, and this is when I really started thinking, where do I belong? I don't belong anywhere. I don't belong anywhere. Well, I had that back in Kansas City too. Just the whole thing that a lot of us have, just the self-loathing, not knowing where I fit in, not good enough, didn't like myself, did I want to be a jock? Not really. Did I want to be a freak? No. So I landed in the middle, and then it was like, where am I? I don't know. But I'm going to drink. So I did a lot of that. And, my dad had to pick me up one time from a party and just, had vomited all over the porch and yanked me up by my hair, and God bless him. But anyway, so then significance of my March 24th, 2021 sobriety, it's pretty amazing because when I was the summer of my junior year, I just didn't like myself. I was so miserable, and I was battling with depression but didn't know it. And I met this guy in a grocery store, and I didn't even like him, but I went out with him. I mean, this was a big thing that I had. Just, you know, no, I could never say no. I was just going to lay down and let you do anything you wanted. Oh, just say or do or whatever, and I'll take it. Because like me, like me. And then I just didn't know how to say no. So I dated this guy for a year. And I wound up pregnant. And that's a big no-no for back in the day. My folks were converts. I don't know if I said that. Baptist to Catholic. And they were good. They were good parents. They really were. But they did what they thought they were supposed to do. But it was very damaging. And that was to send me away. And they sent me to the Salvation Army downtown Chicago. And 2 weeks later, I called crying. I said, I can't take it here. My mom called my sister Cindy, who's the oldest, and said, can Marianne come live? Yes, she can. So I go out and I live with Cindy, and I have my baby there. And I gave her up. I went out with Cindy's like in September, gave birth March 24th, and that's the significance of my sobriety date because she turned 44 this year on my sobriety date. So that's really something. It's March 24th of 1977, so a date I will never forget ever. And so when I went to Gallup, New Mexico, I had her there, and then the adoption took place in Santa Fe. And it was a closed adoption, so I just got to see her when she was presented to me after the birth. And she had beautiful strawberry blonde hair. Well, I snuck down to the nursery. I wasn't supposed to know that, but she had beautiful strawberry blonde hair, itty bitty little thing, just darling. And I named her Teresa, and that was that. And I never saw her again. I got to choose her family, thank God, on paper. That was closed adoption back then, and so. Then I came back in April to Naperville, and it was like, oh, now I have to be this person. I've lost my weight, and here I am. And, you know, and nothing's wrong with me because my parents told me that I had to say to my, that I was taking care of my grandma in Florida. She needed help. So I was supposed to, you know, tell everybody that. And so meanwhile, I'm in really Gallup, New Mexico, finishing my senior year of high school. And that colored my world. It was so devastating. Not giving her up. I knew I was giving her life. I mean, yes, devastating and giving her up. Yes, but the blame, the shame, the tremendous shame came from my mom and dad sending me away. And once again, I'm not blaming them. That's what you did. But the shame and the disgust and the guilt of what I was now. And so that just spiraled me out of control. So that's when I came back. I got a job in Chicago for a few months, and then I went, came back to the suburbs because I was going to go to college. Those were two wonderful years. I got my associate's in applied science because of Paul. I really wanted to go into the theater, but I went because of Paul, and worked with the disabled, the mentally and physically challenged for several years. And but before I met this guy, I had this big time where I just went to the bars, the disco, never dressed like the disco. But babe, I was out there doing all the dances and just throwing it back, and it was just a mess. It was a mess. That's when I just, you know, would drive drunk, and we'd go up down ramps in Chicago, and you know, haha, that's real funny. And then, so then I finished my degree, and then I met this guy, and guess what? Met him in a bar, and he was an alcoholic. And he was all bandaged up from getting in a horrible car crash. And, you know, I'm going, oh, poor thing. Yeah, here's my number. So he goes, comes to pick me up, and he doesn't even know my name. What an asshole. No. So anyway, yeah. So I'm like, okay. And he walks around me like, okay, is this her? And I'm just like, yeah, okay, okay, we'll go for dated the guy for 2 years. Okay, that's thick. So anyway, the only way to get away from him was to fly to another state. And that's what I did. I got on a plane and went to Kansas City, Kansas to stay with my sister. And by then I was really, really bad off. And I had gone there to take my life. Whew. And no one knew. I had all these pills with me, and I was going to take my life. And but I didn't, thank God. I got a job. I got back on my feet. My sister was so kind. Well, kind of. And then I started to date again, and I dated this guy who I just fell in love with. He was Larry, who the stage sound guy from did Johnny Cash. And he broke my heart. 3 months later, he broke up, whatever. So I was not going to be dating anymore. That was, you know, not for me. And so the partying just was started up again. And, you know, I was going out every night getting drunk and, you know, sick and getting drunk and sick and all that. And then one day, you know, this guy comes in this bank and it's Mark. And he writes me this note. Do you want to go out with me? And, of course, I said, no, I lied. Of course, I lied. I lied with everything because I wanted to be loved and liked. And if I didn't feel like I belonged, then I couldn't just be honest. I mean, I couldn't assert myself. I was so unhealthy. I could not assert myself to say, no, I don't want to date you right now, or I just need a few months, or get back with me on that, or I couldn't do any of that. So, but I'm so glad I said yes later down the road with Mark, because he truly was, it was a match made in heaven. We were two sick peas in a pod. No, but really, we have a great relationship. He's been with me throughout all this. It's been, you know, 37 years, 38 in June that we actually met. It's been a rough, rough road. It's been work. It's been a lot of work. And but we are at a point in our life that now we're able to, I guess really enjoy. Not that we didn't enjoy each other's company before, but, you know, everybody knows what I mean that has long marriages. But anyway, it's just a lot of work. So anyway, flash forward. I don't even know what the time is. God, is it 10 o'clock already? After that, Mark and I met in Kansas City, then we moved here to Atlanta, and, I moved, you know, we had my son in Atlanta. We moved here when he was 10 months old, and it was mainly to get the hell out of, away from my family. So, because Mark and I, you know, met and married in Kansas City, and then we moved back to Oak Park because he had some illustration stuff he had to do, and then we came here. So, anyway, after that, then I had my two children in 85, I mean, 86 and 88. And those were years that I really did not drink. Probably the dry alcoholic was just ripe and ready to scream and do temper tantrums and hit you and throw phones, because that's what I did my whole life when I was little. I just threw temper tantrums if I didn't get my way. That continued into our marriage. I was just sick. I was a sick person and a very wounded person. And anyway, so that's what Mark dealt with, poor thing. But we raised our children, and I think that's probably one of the best things I've ever done well in the middle of all of this. And I hope they feel that way. I think they do. But after they left and they, you know, I am, and I still have to work on it. I am so attached to people, places, and things, you guys. I have to learn that detachment every single day. I have to get up and give it to God because it's so hard. And so with each move and each change that came with my work and during those times when the kids were growing up and or they were leaving, I would just go more and more into a depression and drink more. And finally, Mark said, this is when John died in 89, we just moved into this house and, you know, it rocked our world. And he's in 96, he said, look, you got to go get on something. And so I did. And thank God, because that saved my life. The serotonin, the antidepressant saved my life. So anyway, I did that. And then, then worked and, you know, went into the medical field and loved it and worked. And then, I worked at this one school for about 6 years. I loved that job. But then a friend of mine came and she said, hey, you know, I can give you, you know, $42,000 a year. And I thought, oh my God, I'll take it. And, she said, I want you to come and do a startup with me, a Medicare startup. And boy, that was something I didn't even know what that was. I kept telling the principal at the school I worked with, you know, I'm going to a startup. I'm going to a Medicare startup. I remember the look on his face. It was like, okay. So anyway, I get there and it's 2 years of just this fast paced stuff. Is you could never get off the train. It was like this high, you know, and I'm attached to that, right? The drama. The speed of things. Oh my God. That's why I love the medical field. Oh my God. I'm with somebody and they're dying. But seriously, I mean, all of that, it just, that's what fed me. And I was good at my job, but this one was different. And so here comes the wine and I'm like setting all this stuff up for her because I'm her assistant to the VP of this new startup and I've got all this wine and I can just do whatever I want. And I'm just, you know, throwing it back, you know, all the time. So I did that. And then, fast forward, I lost, the job was just the boss quit and I went on to something else. And then I went from job to job to job because it was right in the middle of the crash. And so I was out there looking for jobs and I couldn't find any. So I'd have 2 months here, 3 months there, 5 months here. It was a roller coaster. All the while the drinking was picking up. And that was when I'd go to Total Wine. It became like going to Dillard's. I would just like, oh my God, the wine. And I'd get out my notes and, you know, Mark would go, what the hell is taking you? So, oh, wait a minute. You know, the beer, wait a second. You know, I'd show up to all the tastings, you know, all that stuff, you know, on the weekends. Come on, let's just stop in here for a little nip, you know. He'd be out there looking at something else, poor thing. Anyway, so here I am doing all that, and then I can't even remember. Anyway, so then in 2003, we had a very bad thing in our marriage, a financial stressor that was very bad, and I did something that was not good. I was a very unhealthy attachment to this monk that was, I'm sorry, but that's the truth. And it was terrible. It was a spiritual connection. You know, I had this, because I was like seeking God at that point and really, really wanted to better myself. And even though I was still a Catholic and I had trouble with the Catholic Church and all that jazz, I wanted something else. I'd heard about this contemplative prayer and I wanted to do that. So I went out to the Holy Spirit out there in Conyers and I met this monk. He was just the best, really a good connection. But then it became a very unhealthy emotional connection that you could say it was an emotional affair, really. And so it devastated Mark. It almost broke our marriage. It was devastating. We made it up out of that. But there was a lot of drinking during that time with this guy. So anyway, fast forward to that. And then in 2018, you know, I think all of you know, 2017. Mark's brother took his life in April. And then I had in 2018 then, my uncle died, my mother-in-law died, and Paul died, and it was a right in a row. It was, you know, and so that was a horrific time because I have to backtrack again. In 2004 and 5, we moved to Denver for Mark's job. And some of it worked out, some of it didn't, but it was a hell of a year. And that's when Mark said he saw that I was starting to have it in the house constantly, the beer, the wine, the beer, but it was constant. And so when we got back here that year after, he went to work. He's an illustrator, but he was doing security at part time. And that's when I started to really isolate and drink, you know, after 5. So I was a 9-to-5 girl, you know, whatever, trying to do her thing. And then I would just drink totally when I got home. And that was that. And not a lot of people knew. I think not a lot of people knew, but I'm sure the ones that I called, you know, every now and then, and they knew that because they could tell I was slurring and all that. So then all those deaths came, and then I was laid off. And that all happened in April, March, and August of 2017 and 2018. And so the way I dealt with all of that was just to drink. And now I'm getting mean, okay, because now I'm chasing, you know, whiskey. I was drinking whiskey, chasing it with my beer. I was starting to hide bottles. The wine, you know, it was a mess. It was a mess. And then the last job that I had when they laid me off, and they laid me off because they got rid of the whole reception area. But who knows, maybe because they smelled booze on me. I don't know. Maybe that was one of their excuses. I don't know. But anyway, so, that was it. So I, forget what I was saying, but anyway, so that, it just was bad. I came into work with this big, huge thing on my chin because I had fell out of bed. And of course I blamed it, you know, all on my, getting my feet caught up in the covers. And I remember everybody that at work, and I kind of remember believing that myself, but throughout these last throughout these last 8 years or whatever, there were moments in my life where I had, you know, I am an alcoholic, Marianne. I remember distinctly when I worked for that lady at the Medicare startup, looking in the mirror and saying, you're an alcoholic, but you can go ahead and just, you still have time to drink. So I had that. And then there was a couple of more times when Mark's mother died, I remember walking around Macon Hospital. And I remember telling his brother, who's got like 27 years or whatever, no, he doesn't have 27. He has 17 years. And I said, Paul, do you think I'm an alcoholic? And he goes, well, you know what they say. He said, if you think you are, you are. He goes, I can't tell you are. Well, I didn't know what any of that meant. But so I just, you know, kind of filed that back in my head. And then fast forward in the summer, after all the deaths, and I was drinking, I thought it was August of 2019, and I went to Florida to stay with my sister for a little bit. She was visiting from Chicago there, and I had my second blackout. I had my first blackout when I was 19, but this was my second one, and it was frightening. I remember getting up and saying, Claudia, I think I'm an alcoholic. I need help. I don't know what I'm going to do. And she said, oh, Marianne, you know, I love you. I'll be with you and all that. And then when I got back, I had my brother-in-law come. He came to visit. I think some of you met him. And I said, Chris, I need to go to a meeting, but I don't want you telling anybody. And you know, just none of the dyers, you know, I won't, you know. He said, no, absolutely not. So we went to this meeting in Buckhead, and we left. It was hot as hell, and we left. And I remember thinking, I'm not going back. I'm certainly not going to tell Chris, but I'm not going back. I wasn't ready, obviously. But he was, God bless him. He got back to New York. He would text me every single day, you know, how you doing, blah, 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 all these little, you know, things. And I'd go, yeah, I'm fine. In other words, you know, get the hell off my back. And then I went to a meeting. Mark said, there was something, I can't remember it, but anyway, Mark said, Marianne, he sat me down one day and he said, your eyes look crazy and your face is puffy. You're an alcoholic. I love you. I'm never going to leave. I've got your back, but you got to go. You got to go to a meeting. And I said, okay, I'll go. So we took all the rest of the beer. We went over to the next door neighbor and shared it with them because they were beer drinkers. That's terrible. So, but I don't know what I was thinking of. But anyway, we did that. And then Mark said, and I said, then go with me. He said, of course. So we go to Napa for the first time. And it was unbelievable. I walked into the rooms, and I this was in late August. It must have been late August. And the people were just so wonderful. And this beautiful woman, a lot of you know her, brought me the blue book and said, you know, I mean, all these people came up to me after the meeting and just their numbers, and it was overwhelming. And so this beautiful woman came up to me and she said, you know, do you think you're an alcoholic? I said, I don't know, and I'm just bawling. And then she walks me over to the cabinet and gives me the blue book. And I was so moved by that. Then this other lady walked up to me and she said, you know, here's my number. You know, I want to sponsor you. She was younger. I said, oh, great. Couldn't say no, of course. And so I get home and I'm going, oh, yes, I'll be your sponsee. And met her at Sandy Springs, the 8111, and came back and I just thought, no, I can't do this. I don't want to do this. I'm not ready. I'm going to do this on my own. So I got out all the new emails to the people that, you know, Chris, I'm doing this on my own. I got the counselor. I'm going to go change my medication. And, you know, and then I called that or texted that girl. I said the same thing. Texted a lot of people that I had met that day. And then in September, we went to Mexico, New Mexico to see my son and drank the whole time. It was horrible. I'd come back at night at the bed and breakfast, whatever the place we stayed in. And it was awful. It was so depressed. It was so awful. And, came back and then, it doesn't matter. So anyway, November 19th then is when I walked back into the rooms and it for good. And I said, this is it. But I didn't get a sponsor right away because I was so overwhelmed from the last time. And I know this sounds like excuses, but that's how I felt. And then I wasn't ready. I wanted to, but I just wasn't ready. So I hear this beautiful woman's voice. I'll never forget it at the 11:30 and, on a Saturday, and somebody says, hey, Patty, what do you got for us? And, she goes, well, my name's Patty, and I'm just another alcoholic. Just, you know, something like to that effect, like, you know, I'm just another bozo on the bus. And that resonated with me and must have stuck back in my subconscious because I said, wow, I really like her. And I said something about being a functional alcoholic. And she turned to me and she said, yeah, she did this. And I thought, okay, she understands me because I didn't have the DUIs. I didn't have the rehabs. I didn't have the horrible stories, the painful stories that I had heard. And so that was part of my relapse because anyway, so I So I left that meeting, and it was wonderful. And then, you know, Patty and I started doing our stuff in late December, beginning of January. And then I relapsed in March, and, you know, you've all have heard this, I was taking my daughter to the airport, the pandemic hit, trying to get her back on. And then after I got her on, I said, oh, dear God, I'm so glad she's gone, the anxiety. And if she's here, I love you, Anna, but she's not, so she couldn't make it. That's good. But anyway, so I go to the doctor because I was not feeling good, and he gives me this stuff for albuterol for my cats and blah, blah, blah. And I got back in the car, and I said, I'm going to go get a bottle of wine. And it was twofold. Number one, I wanted it. Number two, I swear, I wanted to see if I could do this relapse thing, because why shouldn't I? Because everybody else has done this horrible relapse thing, so I should do it too. I should have this too. That's screwy thinking. So I did. I relapsed for that 5 hours, and then called Patty immediately and went to bed and rested, and then got up and did the 545, went back right back to the 545. She goes, you got to pick up a white chip. I said, hell to the no. No, but I did. I went and picked it up, and humiliating. It was humiliating, but it was the best thing I ever did. And then, you know, we started from there. And so it's just, it has been, I cannot tell you really, because I think I've already shared this in many meetings, that I've had two turning points in my life. One in the very beginning, the pink cloud thingy, you know, for those first, almost for the, probably like the 2 or 3 months. And then by the fourth month, I was starting to think, what would it be like? And then I would go, oh no. And then I'd go to the studio where I would used to clean for my theater. And then I'd go, oh, there's the wine. Oh no. And so I was already planting this stuff in my head. And so, you know, I think by the time that Anna got here, it was probably already in me, you know. But anyway, so, just, I cannot thank you guys enough, because the program, I'm going to steal this from Mike, because it's true for me, that the steps that I love the most are 1, 3, 6, 7, and 10, and 12. And it's a program. We have a disease, you guys. We all know this. It's a disease. It's an allergy. And the obsession, somebody on here, we're going to hear him speak soon, is so eloquent about talking about the obsession. Well, all of you guys have done this at one time or another for me, but today I heard it fresh again from this man. And he talks about the obsession. And he talks about how the obsession can be squashed, you know, once we get hold of surrendering to God, surrendering and allow the higher power, whoever that is, whatever that is, and when you have that little bit of willingness and he's able to get in there, then the obsession can lie dormant, I think is what he said. Obsession, okay, right here. It's the drink. It is to drink, enjoy, and get away with it. And what we have in common is the obsession. It can be arrested when you come to AA. And when you go back out, it comes back full force. It's an incurable physical problem. And that came from one of the gentlemen who I love and adore who's here tonight, and it came from another guy who shared this today, and the same topic. And this gentleman too said, "I wish I could drink because I loved how it made me feel and I loved the taste, but I know I can't." And that's me. You know, I have to be honest that, yes, God, what would it be like to have that delicious taste of red wine? Maybe I'll get there where I won't even, I'll go, yuck, gross. But the more important part also, I think, is for me to, is to realize that I continually realize that I have an allergy. It'll never go away. It's laying dormant. And it's waiting. It's waiting to take me. If I pick up that first drink, I'll be right back where I was and then some because of the progressiveness of it. And I know I did not articulate that well at all, so I'll let you guys fill in the blanks. But and then the last thing, I'll just close with this one quote if I could find it, and I probably can't, so that's okay. Oh, well, I'm just going to quote this from Tinsley, because I know he won't mind that I do, because a lot of us have said this too. Page 61, chapter 25, it's easier for us to stay sober than it is to get sober. I have a spiritual malady that wants to kill me. And that's Tim R. Anyway, you guys, is it midnight yet? Okay, I'm done.
Yay, Mary.
Thank you, Mary Ann. Did it. Go to bed.
Thank you, Mary Ann.
Let it go, Mary Ann.
It's fantastic.
That was fabulous.
Thank you, Mary Ann.
You're welcome, everybody. I'm so glad everybody, I'm so glad you guys all came, really. I couldn't do it without you. I need you every single day. I need these meetings. Meeting makers make it. Thank you, Ann and Doris. You always tell me that. I have to stay in the moment, in the present, and I have to work the steps every day. I have to meditate and pray. And I have to continually give it to God over and over and over every single day. So, with that, you guys can go home and go to bed.
Thank you, Mary Ann. I just loved that. And, you know, I just love knowing you better. And,
thank you.
And I will tell you that the part of you that you apologize the most for, your empath part, is the part that I love so much, and I've learned so much because I'm like the opposite of that, and that's what makes the world go round.
Yeah.
You know, everybody can't be an empath, you know, it'd be chaos. And you know, not everybody can be whatever the opposite of that is, a Julie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Definitely be chaos, right? So, you know, just a beautiful trait that you have that I learn a lot from on an everyday basis.
Thank you so much, Julie. Thank you.